Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the program. This is episode number 423. This week on the program, we've got some great news, some really exciting stuff. We've got some content from illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison, including a new Masonic Minute. And I have a few articles that I pulled in relation to the Thanksgiving holiday. Now, I know it's past, and we just finished Thanksgiving, but it really kicks off the season. And such a part of Freemasonry is the contemplative slash reflective meditative kind of stuff, right? And one of the things that I think is important to do is we've just celebrated the holiday, and now it's time to reflect on some stuff. So hopefully what we can do is bring some interesting points of view from some writings and will allow us to explore the idea of Thanksgiving, what it means to be thanks and giving. And hopefully, by understanding, it assists us in reflecting and maybe being a little voice in the back of our heads throughout the giving season, which, of course, is part of being a Freemason and acting above the standard. So we will get into all of that right after this.
All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program. And in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right, one more thanks goes out to everybody out there who is supporting our program, supporting your program, we should say, really. And before we get into the education, let me just mention a few quick things here. We've got some news and a few other little updates. So first and foremost, go over to WCYpodcast.com, click on our friends, and click on Franklin's Fortune.
What is Franklin's Fortune? It's a deck-building game. That's right. We've talked about it in the past. I think it's a fantastic, awesome family game. My sons and I play it. My daughter's still too young, but even my youngest son, who is almost 10, can play this game. And while it's recommended for a little bit older than 10, they all love it. And we have a blast playing this game. You learn valuable life lessons from Benjamin Franklin as you gain energy and persistence and earn sterling. It's a really fun game. So I encourage you to check that out. If you use the promo code WCY, you're going to get $5 off your order. So it's kind of the season of giving, right? So consider this as probably a really good Christmas gift, actually. But here's my ask. Don't give this game and that's it, right? Because we all know if you have kids, who received board games for Christmas, and here's what happens. It sits in a pile, and then they open it, they lose all the pieces, and you never actually play it, and in 2 or 3 years you gather what's left and you throw it in the Goodwill bin, or you throw it in the garbage. Don't do that with this game. My advice is to give this game when you're ready to play it. Make it an event. Give it on St. Nicholas night or maybe on Christmas Eve or something and break it out as a family fun thing to do and play it when you open it. It makes it so much more special because then they don't take for granted the pieces and how you play the game and all of this. So if you're like my family and your kids get games and this is what happens, don't do the typical thing. Buy this for your friends, for your family, and then play it with them. I think you guys will enjoy it. So again, franklinsfortune.com is the website, or you can click through our link on our website, which is probably preferred. I think that's how our brother is figuring that you came to him through us. WCY is your promo code or your coupon code. Next, also under our friends, we have the Intellectual Linear Progression. Now, we mentioned them and how to support the program, but here's the deal. New enrollment on OnlineGreatBooksProgram.com is opening again on January 6th. So, if you enroll, you're going to get 25% off of your first 3 months with the program. And the program actually assists us with donating a little bit back as well. So I would encourage you to check that out. If you are into literally becoming smarter and more well-rounded in your general intellect, your world knowledge, this is a program for you. So check that out. January 6th is open enrollment. It doesn't last a long time for open enrollment, so you're going to want to get over there and get on the waiting list and whatever you need to do. But it will be awesome. All right. Now for the big news. The big news is Masonic Con Chicago. The Chicago Masonic Con, September 18th, 19th, and 20th in 2020. You can go to Masonic Con Chicago to find all of the things that I'm going to tell you. We have a completed speakers list. Our speakers list includes Tim Hogan, Todd Creason, Brian Simmons, Jason Richards, Scott Duvall, Alex Powers, Steve Harrison, Joe Martinez, John Ruark, Dago Rodriguez, and one Christopher Hodapp. So 11 speakers, 3 days. It's going to be amazing. The schedule is like this. On Friday the 18th from 1 to 3 p.m., we're going to try to get into Feed My Starving Children. It's a charity event where we will be able to pack food for children and people in need. That's a wonderful thing we can do, and we'll assist with the mission of charity in Freemasonry. So, yes, it's all education here, but we wanted to put that in there. So we're going to have a great event. Thanks to Gary Meisner for coming up with this wonderful idea for us to do to exemplify our way to be true Freemasonry. So that will be for anybody who can make it. You don't have to go to that. You can skip it altogether. But you are on your feet. There are some jobs that we can do also where you can sit and do it. You'll be doing labeling and whatever. It's like a 2-hour deal. We just pack food, and it's a lot of fun. Then we'll break probably about 3 o'clock after that. Then you've got a little 2-hour break in the middle there. We'll have a social hour starting at 5 to 6 p.m., some welcome comments at 6:15. Then we're going to have our festive board. The festive board is going to be from 6:30 to question mark. I think we'll have probably till 11 at the event space, which is literally right next to the lodge.
So we'll have a special guest MC for the evening. And then Saturday morning we'll start at 8 a.m. with coffee and donuts. And then at 8:45 we'll hit some logistics, and 9 a.m. is our first presenter. So we'll have Alex Powers at 9 a.m., Brian Simmons at 10, Dago Rodriguez at 11. And then at noon, we'll have a lunch and a vendor break from 12 to 1:30. So you get about an hour and a half to go grab lunch. We have 63 restaurants in the vicinity of the lodge, so finding something to eat won't be a problem. We've got Scott Duvall on at 1:30, Joe Martinez at 2:30, John Ruark at 3:30. Then we have a Masonic Con panel discussion from 4:30, probably till 5. And then we've got about a 15-minute break. And then at 5:15, Steve Harrison. And then we're going to break for dinner because we already did our festive board. So you're free to go get dinner at any local event joint of the 63 restaurants around. And then we're hopefully going to regroup for those who would like to at 8:30 p.m. And we're going to do a watch party of a Masonic movie. What movie? Well, I think what would be fun is I'm looking forward to watching. I'm kind of an old soul, so I like some older movies. I wanted to watch Murder by Decree, which is a Sherlock Holmes film. It's pretty good and has some fantastic Masonic significance. In fact, the whole movie is Masonic, really. But don't watch it yet. You want to watch it with us. What I'm proposing, and hopefully what we can accomplish, is a panel Q&A after the movie with our three illustrious brothers present, which would probably be like around 10:30 p.m. Right, so it's a late night, but it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have popcorn and all this great stuff. And hopefully I can convince Brother Creason, Brother Harrison, and Chris Hodapp to talk a little bit about the conspiracies of Jack the Ripper and its connections to Freemasonry. To talk a little bit about the Jack the Ripper conspiracy, because that's kind of what Murder by Decree is all about. So again, this is subject to change. It might change totally. It might not. We'll see how it pans out. And then Sunday we'll start at 10 a.m. Jason Richards coming in at 10. Then Tim Hogan will be at 11 a.m. And then Chris Hodapp at noon. And then we'll close it out at 1. And everybody is free to depart. So we may have an additional presentation coming on Sunday. We'll see. If that's the case, that might be at 9 a.m. in the morning. We'll see. And we may have to move somebody from Saturday to Sunday. You know, like I said, we'll see how this works out, but this is the tentative schedule as it goes right now. We've launched the logistics page on MasonicConChicago.com. It'll tell you where we're having the event, which is Libertyville Masonic Temple, which is, we're actually north of Chicago, but there's a lot of benefits to that, so it'll be great. We've got some hotels listed there with approximate costs. We have places to eat listed, and of course the full list of videos that we've produced for the last few weeks are all there as well. So head on over to MasonicConChicago.com to learn more. The ticket prices are out. We went ahead and published those, and I'll tell you right now, it's a pretty amazing deal. So the festive board only, you'll have to contact us for that, because we really can't sell tickets to the dinner by itself. We've got our general admission ticket, which will go on sale to the subscribers of our email list on December 9th, and everybody else at the public can go ahead and pick those up starting on December 11th. Our executive pass, that goes on sale December 11th for everybody. But starting Monday, that's tomorrow morning for my listeners here, if you're on that email list, you can get the executive pass right now, basically. The executive pass is going to be on sale. Normal price is going to be $165 for an executive pass. But if you have the email, you can get that ticket for $150. The value of that ticket is over $175. I can tell you that what you'll get for that money, your $150, if you're on the email list, of course, it's the ticket to the festive board, so your full meal, access to all your lectures all weekend long, 3 days. Hopefully we'll organize some early bird access to your vendors. There'll be a commemorative button pin, a personalized lanyard, an exclusive lapel pin that we're designing, and a one-year subscription to the Rocky Mountain Mason magazine. That's the kicker, right? This is all about Masonic education, so how do we enable you to continue your journey in receiving more light in Freemasonry? and that will be through the Rocky Mountain Mason magazine subscription. That's a quarterly magazine. We have a link there on the website. You can check that out. December 2, they'll be able to get the executive pass for 1 week at the $150 rate. After that, it's going to go up to the $165. Then, general admission tickets and executive pass will be able to be purchased by our subscribers, and on the 11th is when both tickets will go on sale to the general public. That's another question I had. People said, hey, this is open to the public. Why are you open to the public? We're open to the public so that we don't have any issues with recognition or what anybody would consider if there's not a recognized, say, a Prince Hall Lodge that's not recognized by one Grand Lodge and yada, 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 or whatever the case may be. It's a truly global event that people can come together and have a lot of fun and not worry about all that stuff. So we'll even have, it's good for membership too. Bring your friends, bring your family if they're interested. Just grab them a ticket and show up. Just in time for Christmas, you can buy some Masonic education. It'll be a great time. All right, so I just talked to you for 10 minutes about Masonic education and MasonicCon Chicago. Big news. I'm excited about it. But now I want to get into this week's first education piece. This first piece is called An Encounter with a Fringe Element, and it's by Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd degree, FMLR. And this article was really funny to me, and I tried to capture an audience by the image I used for the article. To see that, you'll just have to go to midnightfreemasons.org, but here's the piece, and try not to laugh. Coffee warning. You know, spit takes, all that stuff, so here you go. I suppose we've all had varying degrees of experiences with someone who thinks the Freemasons are responsible for everything from running the deep state to Jimmy Hoffa's disappearance. On a personal level, I haven't had many, but the following account is about one encounter I had years ago with what one might call the fringe element. Back in about 2003, I was an IT consultant to a company where word had gotten around that I was one of those weird Freemasons. One day, I'm sitting in a conference room with a couple of other guys working out the details of a database design. Across the room, another guy, let's call him John, was sketching things on a whiteboard in preparation for a meeting later in the day. All was quiet and businesslike when in walks the corporate nutball. Let's call him Tom. Tom was a piece of work. The views he openly and freely expressed made the flat earthers look like top scientists. He bought into every conspiracy theory around, and some I think he made up on his own. On top of that, Tom had a temper. One day, when his desk phone wasn't working, he decided to express his displeasure by flinging it across the room, which left the wires behind the jack broken and dangling out of the wall, while the phone just missed a plate glass window and shattered when it hit the wall. Some of his outbursts were more mild. Apparently, he didn't get fired because he was a good programmer. It was almost like he was an idiot savant, with less emphasis on the savant part. I always found it a good practice to stay away from Tom. John, on the other hand, was a quiet guy with a good sense of humor. We worked together on a few things, and I thought I got to know him pretty well. On occasion, we went to lunch together. He was charming, friendly, and popular. He had, as far as I could see, only one drawback. He hung around a lot with Tom. So, while I was working with my team, Tom walked up to John on the other side of the room, and they started talking at a level that was inaudible to me. And suddenly, as loud as he could manage, Tom yelled a single word, something that would be familiar to us all, the password of a Master Mason. On the other side of the room, the three of us turned to look at the aftermath of Tom's Tourette-like outburst. The two guys with me merely saw it as another one of Tom's Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moments, but I know it was directed at the weird one. The goat-riding, devil-worshipper, the Illuminati, me. Oh, Tom, you clever boy. You know the password. You've broken the centuries-old code. Did you find it on one of the 10,000 websites that list it? Or did God himself reveal it to you? The password's echo faded, the conference room fell silent, and we all went back to work as if nothing had happened. Out in the bullpen, John's workstation and mine were next to each other. so we interacted, bantered, and joked back and forth a lot. I never asked him what he thought of Tom's outburst, and he never mentioned it. He proved to be bright and level-headed. Then one day he shocked me when he asked for a petition. I was thrilled. This young, articulate guy was exactly the kind of man we would want in the fraternity. I brought him one the next day. He lived too far away to petition my lodge, but I told him I would put him in touch with lodges in his area. I said I could not be his first-line signer since he would not be petitioning my lodge, a rule in Missouri that has since been rescinded, but would put him in touch with someone who could do that. I also explained the petitioning process and told him he would be meeting with an investigation committee. He took the petition and thanked me. Later that day, I walked into another area of the office, and there I saw Tom and John going over the petition together. That's when I realized John never wanted to join the Freemasons. What he and Tom really wanted was to see the dastardly things a Masonic candidate had to reveal about himself and agree to in order to join the evil empire. I'm pretty sure Tom and John didn't notice that I saw them dissecting the petition. Needless to say, John never brought it back to me, and I never mentioned it again. Hey, I'm a Master Mason. It wasn't the first time I'd been hoodwinked. Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd Degree. I found that piece hilarious, particularly the middle. But also, I've had those kind of friendships where people are just curious about something, and when they get what they want from you, they stop talking to you about it or whatever the case might be. It's a little bit of a bummer. But as Steve said, no skin off his back, really. But it was funny, especially in the context of this kind of thing. And I think about shows like IT Crowd. I think about shows like The Office and how this might play out in my head. And I think that's why I found it so funny. We've got a great addition to this week. So we read one of Steve's pieces. And let's go ahead and hear from illustrious Brother Harrison for this week's Masonic Minute.
Danny Thomas, a member of Gothic Lodge 270 in Hamilton Square, New Jersey, was an American nightclub entertainer, television star, producer, and most notably, the founder of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Born Amos Mujad Yakub Karuz, Brother Thomas was best known for his role in the television show Make Room for Daddy. A devout Roman Catholic, Brother Thomas was also an avid golfer with a handicap of 10, one of the original owners of the Miami Dolphins, the sponsor of two PGA tournaments, and the first non-Jewish member of the Hillcrest Country Club in Los Angeles. It's a little-known fact that in a 1960 episode of his TV show, Thomas was inadvertently responsible for creating an American icon. In that episode, a country bumpkin sheriff stopped Thomas's character for speeding. Thomas protested that he was innocent, and the plot followed his trials and tribulations while dealing with the small-town sheriff who was convinced Thomas had been speeding. When Thomas demanded to see a judge, it turned out the sheriff was also the town judge. When Thomas insisted on talking to the press, he discovered the sheriff was also the local newspaper editor. The show was so popular, the network decided to make it a pilot for a new show featuring the exploits of that country sheriff, played by none other than Andy Griffith. Griffith himself was not a Freemason, but he held the fraternity in high regard and actually got his comedic start playing Summers at the Dare County Shrine Club in North Carolina. The Andy Griffith Show ran for 8 seasons and itself spun off another TV classic, Gomer Pyle, U.S. Marine Corps. Brother Thomas was also a member of the Scottish Rite and the Almalika Shrine. He received the Congressional Gold Medal, and in 2012, the U.S. Postal Service honored him by issuing a forever stamp recognizing his humanitarian accomplishments. When once asked about Freemasonry, Brother Thomas said, I am a Mason because I care for those who cannot care for themselves. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, as usual, mega thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Harrison for his 113th Masonic Minute. Incredible. I would really urge you all to go over to WCYpodcast.com, click on the bookstore, and check out some of those books. Now, I don't get any kickbacks or anything. It's just a place where I list the books from brothers who are authors who have been on the program, or books that I find fascinating, and I just want to put a link back to those. There you will find illustrious Brother Harrison's books, and I would encourage you to check those out. Of course, it's no secret, a book that's very fun and is one of my favorites is his book on Oak Island, and of course, Tales from the Craft. Those are two of my favorites. However, the epic tome that he helped put together on Ray V. Denslow is your best bet in getting a book that explains some of the history and viewpoints in the fraternity from probably what Steve calls the Mason of the Century. Check out that book, Ray V. Denslow's compendium of two books, really, or grab the Kindle edition for $10, which is searchable, and both volumes are there. Alternatively, you can do an additional step. You could join the Missouri Lodge of Research and get those books for the low, low cost of your dues each year, which I think is only $25 or $35 or something like that. $35, I think. But we'll have links to all that in the show notes if it interests you. Just a couple weeks ago, I received an email from Brother Michael Miller, and he was talking a little bit about the giant Masonic conventions that are happening around the United States. Of course, Ezekiel Bates MasonicCon is coming up fast in April. Then we've got EsoterraCon and Texas MasonicCon and the Southeast Masonic Convention Education Conference, and MasonicCon Chicago, and Cooperstown Masonic Convention, Camp Masonry. There's all these great opportunities for these large conventions, and we know you can't go to them all. And it's awesome when we put together these things in areas of the country where the Masonic education isn't super strong, and that's really amazing. But it's also a chance for people to say, hey, let's plan our own, like, regional Masonic Education Conference. And Michael Miller did just that. So he sent me the flyer on it, and I wanted to mention it to everybody, because if you're going to be in the Auburn, New York area on Saturday, February 8th, 2020, so just a couple months away, 3 months, check this out. It's the Mid-State Region Masonic Educational Conference. It's hosted by Auburn Lodge 124. Again, Saturday, February 8th, 2020, 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. It'll be at the Auburn Masonic Center, which is at 5593 South Street Road in Auburn, New York. They will have seven speakers. They have Worshipful Brother Kenneth Stuczynski. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He is with the Lodge of Research. They have Right Worshipful Brother Stephen Adam Rubin, the Grand Treasurer at the Grand Lodge of New York. He's their keynote. And also they have Right Worshipful Gary Heinmiller, who's a grand historian of the Grand Lodge of New York. That alone would pull me into this. But they also have Brother Anthony Cucci, Right Worshipful Daniel Lort, another person that I'm very familiar with, illustrious Brother Richard J. Powell. He's a past commander-in-chief of the Valley of Syracuse, and Right Worshipful Michael A. Miller. So they've got some great speakers. Again, this is the reason for the craft. You should go if it's in your area. In fact, what do we say, right? We kind of have this idea about the cable toe. It's not just a thing you should go to. You have an obligation to go. That's all I'll say, because it's in your local area. You're supporting a local lodge. And this is supporting you as a person by furthering your education. So definitely check that out. They have a flyer that has the registration form on it, and I will attempt to put this as a link, as an uploaded file, and if you need it, then click that link. Otherwise, I would urge you to email millers980@gmail.com. That's millers980@gmail.com. The registration fee is $30. You pay that to Auburn Lodge 124, and the proceeds of this will go toward the Masonic Youth Organizations and Scholarships. So this benefits you and the youth memberships, which I know is near and dear to so many's hearts. So please consider going to that. It's for your benefit. So let's talk a little bit now about the idea of Thanksgiving. This idea of thanks. So this is an expression of gratitude. So when we think about the word Thanksgiving or the Thanksgiving holiday, it's showing an expression of gratitude and it's giving the gratitude to other people, places, things, life experiences, a creator, whatever is appropriate for you. And I don't want to focus on the popular stories that we have, although we'll go through that. But I really want us to focus on the intrinsic nature and the philosophical underpinnings of the holiday itself. So Thanksgiving Day, just we'll run down some brief information, not like you don't know, right? But Thanksgiving Day is a national holiday that's actually celebrated in several different countries. So it's celebrated here in the United States, in Canada, the Caribbean Islands, Liberia, Germany, Japan, Brazil, Australia, Grenada, the Netherlands, Philippines, St. Lucia, in India. There's several other holidays that are similar to what we consider the Thanksgiving Day. So here in the U.S., it's really said to have begun as a day of giving thanks and a sacrifice for the blessings of the harvest. So farming, and if you really want to trace it back, I mean, there is an ancient type of theology that goes along with this. Of course, we talk about the procession, which has ties and roots to the ideas of keeping track of dates, which was heavily arranged around agriculture and the harvest, which meant that you were going to survive again. So similarly named festival holidays also occur in Germany and Japan. Thanksgiving is celebrated on the second Monday of October in Canada and on the fourth Thursday of November in the United States, Brazil, and around the same part of the year in other places. Although Thanksgiving has historical roots in religious and cultural traditions, it has long been celebrated as a secular holiday as well. So prayers of thanks and special Thanksgiving ceremonies are common among almost all religions after the harvest and other times. This is really a sort of appropriation, if you will. This goes back to what we would call the, if there was a prima materia religion, it really is the, well, if you don't count animism and whatnot, you know, we get into the idea of the tracking of stars and the harvest and the years and cycles and seasons. The Thanksgiving holiday's history in North America is rooted in this English tradition that dates back to the Protestant Reformation. It also has aspects of the harvest festival. Even though the harvest in New England occurs well before the late November date on which the modern Thanksgiving holiday is celebrated. In English tradition, days of Thanksgiving and special Thanksgiving religious services became important during the English Reformation. In the reign of Henry VIII, and in reaction to the large number of religious holidays on the Catholic calendar, before 1536, there were 95 church holidays plus 52 Sundays when people were required to attend church and forego work and sometimes pay for expensive celebrations. The 1536 reforms reduced the number of church holidays to just 27, but some Puritans wished to completely eliminate all church holidays, including Christmas and Easter. The holidays were to be replaced by specially called days of fasting or days of Thanksgiving, in response to events that the Puritans viewed as acts of special providence. Unexpected disasters or threats of judgment from on high called for days of fasting. Special blessings viewed as coming from God called for days of thanksgiving. For example, days of fasting were called on account of a drought in 1611, floods in 1613, and plagues in 1604 and 1622. Days of thanksgiving were called following the victory over the Spanish Armada in 1588 and following the deliverance of Queen Anne in 1705. An unusual annual day of thanksgiving began in 1606 following the failure of the gunpowder plot in 1605. familiar. Everybody likes to put out the remember the 5th of November, the Guy Fawkes Day. In Canada, according to some historians, the first celebration of Thanksgiving in North America occurred during 1578, the voyage of Martin Frobisher from England in search of the Northwest Passage. Other researchers, however, state that there is no compelling evidence or narrative of the origins of a Canadian Thanksgiving Day. The origin of Canadian Thanksgiving are also sometimes traced to the French settlers who came to New France in the 17th century, who celebrated their successful harvests. The French settlers in the areas typically had feasts at the end of the harvest season and continued throughout the winter season, even sharing food with indigenous peoples of the area. As settlers arrived in Nova Scotia from New England after 1700, late autumn Thanksgiving celebrations became commonplace. New immigrants into the country, such as the Irish, Scottish, and Germans, also added their own traditions to the harvest celebrations. Most of the U.S. aspects of Thanksgiving, such as a turkey, were incorporated when United Empire Loyalists began to flee from the United States during the American Revolution and settled in Canada. We're all pretty much familiar with how we roll here in the U.S. We eat turkey and way too much food. We have tons of leftovers that sit in our fridge, and we make turkey sandwiches for weeks and watch a ton of football. But we also have these ideas of a trading of goods and services and unity between indigenous peoples and pilgrims who settled here in the United States. So the historical evidence that we've got, just a short article here on Thanksgiving, is pilgrims and Puritans who immigrated from England in the 1620s and 1630s carried the tradition of days of fasting and days of Thanksgiving with them to New England. The modern Thanksgiving holiday tradition is traced to a well-recorded 1619 event in Virginia and a sparsely documented 1621 celebration at Plymouth in present-day Massachusetts. The 1619 arrival of 38 English settlers at Berkeley Hundred in the Charles City County, Virginia, concluded with a religious celebration as dictated by the group's charter from the London Company, which specifically required, quote, that the day of our ship's arrival at the place assigned in the land of Virginia shall be yearly and perpetually kept as a holy day of thanksgiving to Almighty God, end quote. The 1621 Plymouth feast and thanksgiving was prompted by a good harvest, which the pilgrims celebrated with Native Americans who helped them get through the previous winter by giving them food in that time of scarcity. Several days of Thanksgiving were held in early New England history that have been identified as the first Thanksgiving, including pilgrim holidays in Plymouth in 1621 and 1623, and a Puritan holiday in Boston in 1631. According to historian Jeremy Bangs, director of the Leiden American Pilgrim Museum, the pilgrims may have been influenced by watching the annual services of Thanksgiving for the relief of the Siege of Leiden in 1574, when they were staying in Leiden. Now called Oktoberfest, Leiden's autumn Thanksgiving celebration in 1617 was the occasion for sectarian disturbance that appears to have accelerated the pilgrims' plans to emigrate to America. Later in Massachusetts, religious Thanksgiving services were declared by civil leaders such as Governor Bradford, who planned the colony's Thanksgiving celebration and fast in 1623. The practice of holding an annual harvest festival did not become a regular affair in New England until the late 1660s. And so what's interesting here is in some religious organizations, there's a fast followed by a feast, and in typical American fashion, we seem to have lost the fast part. We just keep the feast part. But anyway, Thanksgiving proclamations were made by mostly church leaders in New England up until 1682, and then both by state and church leaders until after the American Revolution. During the Revolutionary period, political influencers affected the issuance of Thanksgiving proclamations. Various proclamations were made by royal governors John Hancock, General George Washington, and the Continental Congress, each giving thanks to God for events favorable to their causes. As President of the United States, George Washington proclaimed the first nationwide Thanksgiving celebration in America, marking November 26, 1789, as, quote, a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, End quote. There is some debate about the nation's first celebrations as well. The question of where the first Thanksgiving was held in the United States has been a subject of debate, primarily between New England and Virginia, complicated by the concept of Thanksgiving as a holiday celebration versus a religious service. James Baker maintains, quote, "The American holiday's true origin was the New England Calvinist Thanksgiving, never coupled with a Sabbath meeting. And the Puritan observances were special days set aside during the week for Thanksgiving and praise in response to God's providence." Baker calls the debate a tempest in a beanpot and marvelous nonsense based on regional claims. However, the day for Thanksgiving services, specifically codified in the founding charter of Berkeley Hundred in 1619, was instrumental in President John F. Kennedy's attempt to strike compromise between the regional claims by issuing Proclamation 3560 on November 5, 1963, stating, quote, "Over three centuries ago, our forefathers in Virginia and in Massachusetts, far from home, in a lonely wilderness, set aside time of Thanksgiving. On the appointed day, they gave reverent thanks for their safety, for the health of their children, for the fertility of their fields, for the love which bound them together, and for the faith which united them with their God." Other claims include an earlier religious service by Spanish explorers in Texas at San Eleuterio in 1598. Folks working at the University of Florida argue that the earliest Thanksgiving service in what is now the United States was celebrated by the Spanish on September 8, 1565 in the current St. Augustine, Florida. So there's just some history relevant to the United States and the Thanksgiving holiday here. Again, it is celebrated around the world on different dates and different times, but it's all very similar, and I think it all has to do with a root back to a, sort of a religious service, really, that's become non-sectarian. And even as, say, like a deist, as myself, I think of Thanksgiving as a way to give thanks to the people in my life that affect me positively. I reflect on the previous year, on my successes and on my failures. I think about the failures and how those will build future successes and try to find the good in all things. And I think that's really important, and to give thanks, of course, to the world we live in and the entire creation that we're present in. Even if you're far removed from any organized religion, even for it just goes without saying that the Thanksgiving season really kicks off or reaffirms a type of attitude we should always have. So next I have a little short piece that came from Howard Koop, KCCH, and it's called "True Thanksgiving is More." So here we go. At the end of the first harvest in the New World, the pilgrims of Plymouth, along with Chief Massasoit and a party of 90 friendly Indians, joined in a celebratory act that consisted of, quote-unquote, 3 days of prayer and feasting. The Mayflower passengers that signed the agreement that became known as the Mayflower Compact stated that they had come to the New World to escape religious persecution and, quote, "for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith," end quote. They endured a stormy voyage across the Atlantic Ocean as the worst possible time of the year, and later participated in that festival to give thanks to Almighty God. The pilgrims were thankful they had survived a stormy voyage, endured a terrible winter, and had been blessed with good harvest that provided them with food. Food was scarce during the terrible winter, their first in the New World. Hezekiah Butterworth, an American author of the last half of the 19th century, passed on information that the daily ration of food was 5 grains of parched corn. During that winter, 47 members of the original 102 died, and at any one time, only 6 or 7 were in proper condition to attend the sick and bury the dead on Coles Hill. Yet in spite of the hardships they endured and the sufferings they experienced, those 30 pilgrims at Plymouth, after inviting the friendly nations to join them, paused to celebrate and to give thanks to God for His providential care. Lest we forget, this is the heritage the pilgrims passed on to us.
A national holiday celebrated with a festive turkey feast commemorates it, but the heritage of those 30 pilgrims remind us that the true Thanksgiving is more. While surrounded by an abundance of things which are accoutrements of an affluent society, we must not forget that back of these things there is the providential care of Almighty God, and like the pilgrims, we are recipients of that care. To see life from this perspective is to see that God's mercies, new every morning and fresh every evening, are more than we can number. So gratitude rises in the heart, and we are thankful. This simple act of acknowledgement and letting somebody know, or proclaiming to yourself out loud as affirmations or prayers that you are this free builder, you're manifesting this stuff. So I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoyed some of the history in this episode, and I invite you to check out the Masonic Roundtable on Thursdays at 9:30, 8:30 Central. And, of course, this program every Sunday at 9:30 p.m. We release a new episode. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel and give us a subscribe and a like on our videos, especially those Steve Harrison videos that we repost for him on our channel as well. And I guess this will be a little reminder that we do go dark for this program. There will be no episode the last 2 weeks of the year. So you get 50 episodes every year. Not bad. And that's because of all of our supporters. So, in true fashion, it's a Thanksgiving episode. Let me say thank you once more to all of our supporters of this program. Whether you donate or you are somebody who constantly shares our content with new brothers, friends, family, whatever the case is, thank you. You have my gratitude. We cannot do this without you. This program would have not the success it has today without you. Just a reminder, this program is listened to by more people. I say people because not everybody who listens to this is a Freemason. But this podcast is listened to by more people than are Freemasons in the United States. That's pretty astounding. So thank you very much, and I'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Stay on the level.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.